This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
If you listen to this show regularly, and by the way, happy Thursday. I hope all of you are having fantastic starts to your morning as we inch closer and closer to the weekend. John Morosi, I feel like we ought to pull the audio on this. Do you remember my question, Danny G, for him down the stretch of our interview yesterday? I said, is there anybody that you think would surprise a lot of people if they were actually traded a big name? And he specifically said Zach Greinke. He said he might end up being able to make somebody might be able to make the move for him. And credit to John Morosi, our Major League Baseball expert, because he didn't say specifically which team, but he said that this trade was very possible. And as a result, the Houston Astros have surged as now the favorite to win the World Series. They are making an aggressive move. The Yankees didn't do anything. The expectation was the Yankees were going to make a lot of moves potentially in the pitching realm, or at least attempt to, and they didn't make anything happen. So I want to bring in the crew here because you guys, I know, Danny G, you're a huge Dodger fan. Does this make you a little bit nervous? The Dodgers with the best record in all of baseball right now, but the Astros basically saying, we believe we can put together the best pitching core in all of baseball, and we've done it before. We know what happened the last time they were in the World Series against the Dodgers. Did they shake you a bit?
Los Angeles and a ton of Dodger fans were up in arms yesterday because fans were hoping that the Dodgers would get a bullpen relief pitcher or a closer to share time with Jansen.
Because Jansen hasn't been the perfect closer that he was the last several years.
He's just no, been okay. He hasn't. He's been up and down. But the Dodgers do have Urias coming out of the bullpen. They do use Maeda coming out of the bullpen in the postseason. They have the arms. They just need the right mindset because obviously it has not ended well the past two postseasons. I think Dodger fans were just hoping, look, get rid of some of the farm prospects and get a couple of arms from a couple other teams so that we could beef up that bullpen, which has been the one spot for the Dodgers that has been a problem, obviously, especially in the World Series. The last couple of World Series have ended the same way with the same exact score. And so Dodger fans, including myself, have been left scratching our heads a little bit because, yeah, it's great having prospects, but you hope your team is going to go all in and go for it. Yankee fans were hoping the same exact thing. So obviously Dodger fans and Yankee fans were both left wondering what could have been at the deadline yesterday, whereas the Astros went all in.
Not only the Astros, the city of Houston is intriguing now from a sports perspective, right? There are a lot of good storylines down there. One, what would just happened with the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Can the Astros go win the World Series again? Two, the Rockets make the move to go get Russell Westbrook, and we'll see how he and James Harden do paired together. That's a pretty intriguing story to follow. And three, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about the Houston Texans. Can they protect Deshaun Watson? Where is their ceiling in the wake of that first-round wild-card playoff defeat at the hands of the Indianapolis Colts? I think there are, I think L.A. is one of the most interesting cities in all of American sports, right? If you're just ranking the cities in terms of storylines and interesting things to follow. And a big part of L.A., obviously, is having Kawhi and Paul George and LeBron James and Anthony Davis all in the same place. But you got the Dodgers uncertainty, and then you got two NFL teams. So there's a lot of good storylines in L.A., a lot of good storylines in Houston. A lot of good storylines now from a sports fan perspective in Houston. Lots of big names, lots of intriguing potential outcomes. We'll see what manifests itself there, but a big move by the Astros nonetheless. Now, your long national nightmare is over. Since Tom Brady hoisted the Lombardi Trophy and the Patriots took down the Rams, we have been sitting around waiting for football to return. And boom, football is now back, baby. I know it's the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio. And I know there are a lot of you out there that say, oh, preseason NFL football stinks. There's no interest in it. I'm not curious about it at all. And I understand that there are some of you who are spoil sports like that. I'm going to be honest with you. when toe meets leather, and they kick off tonight, and we got the Denver Broncos going up against the Atlanta Falcons. You know who's going to be sitting on his couch with television on, waiting to see what's going to happen, even if Matt Ryan's not playing very much, and even if Joe Flacco's not playing very much, and even if the game's not very good? This guy, because even bad football is better than no football. It's like pizza. Pizza may not be great, but it's still pizza. So I will be there. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. I want to bring in the crew. How many of you will be watching the game tonight, starting with you, Danny G? Will you watch any of Broncos Falcons?
Well, here's a clue. I've been watching rerun games on the NFL Network the past few weeks.
There you go. That's how much you are in demand for football.
So I even watched the top 100 all the way through.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. By the way, official new month here, August. Football is back, baby. Will you be watching, Dub?
I mean, that may be the dumbest question you've ever asked me. I am literally so happy that football's back. I can't believe I've survived this long on tennis and golf. I am so ready.
Well, I mean, an embarrassing guy out there is the one who's listening to us right now. He's like, not only am I watching, I set my DVR to watch it on delay because it's football and I can't wait to watch. Eddie Garcia, will you watch?
Not a second. I hate preseason football.
Nah, such a hater.
The only thing about it that's good is it just reminds us that the real football is getting here closer. But preseason football is a total waste of time.
I agree that it's a total waste of time. By the way, I think, is it today, that the NFLPA and the NFL are meeting again, and there are discussions that the NFL owners might really be trying to push for an 18-game regular season. And as a result, they would obviously shorten the preseason, but also be giving the players a lot more money. But yeah, that is so you see, I watch because I think that that what ends up happening it, from a health perspective, is so huge. Right. I mean, and it's kind of like watching with your hands over your eyes, like you're peeking at times if it's your favorite team, because every time your quarterback gets hit, you're like, oh, man, I hope he's not out for the rest of the season. Every time your wide receiver comes up a little bit limp or your defensive end gets his legs cut out from underneath him and stays down for just a hairbreadth of a second long. Getting injured, having your team's top players get injured is tough during the regular season. It's brutal during the preseason. And so it's almost hard to watch, and you can't wait for the starters to get out and get all the scrubs in. But I have to say, it is still pretty exhilarating to know that football is this close. Will you watch, Roberto?
Totally agree with Eddie there. No, not even. I'm not going to watch.
So if you're not going to watch, what are you going to be watching?
I'll be watching the Dodgers.
The Dodgers. All right. So what will you be watching, Eddie?
To be determined.
So do you? So this, by the way, is a good time. To hopefully you've gotten a lot of your responsibilities done if you're a guy out there and your wife or your girlfriend's got stuff around the house or apartment or condo or whatever it is for you to get done, because I know I myself, like on the weekend, once football officially starts, and to me, football is officially starting on August 24th, and the game that I'm already excited to watch is the U, Miami, taking on Florida in Orlando. That's going to be a really good college football kickoff game. To celebrate, I think it's the 150th anniversary of college football. So that'll be really, really entertaining to watch. But yes, in general, I understand the reticence to go all in on preseason football because you feel like you're wasting maybe a little bit of your goodwill that hopefully you have built up in all the months that have taken place, certainly since March Madness. Like, there's nothing that was must-see television in the world of sports. Tiger winning the Masters, maybe, but not that many hours of commitment. Whereas Saturday, Sunday, once football officially gets rolling, you add in Thursday, you add in Monday. I mean, it's almost impossible. We have such a buffet of sports, it's almost impossible to not be diving all in. All right, so appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Welcome back. Football is here. Rejoice, celebrate, and get ready for the gridiron buffet of excess that is soon to be coming your way. Speaking of that, we have, I believe, Frank Isola up next. Is that right? And then in hour three, we got a new guest who I'm pretty excited to debut with you guys. He is David Chow, and if you follow him on Twitter, he's at Pro Football Injury Expert. What's his official? Pro Football Doc, I think, is his Twitter handle. But he, in real time, he used to be the San Diego Chargers team doctor, and in real time, based on looking at video, he will diagnose what he thinks is likely to be the injury situation of players. And he's phenomenal. He's incredibly talented at it. And for people out there who say, well, how in the world can you tell what the injury status is of a player by watching a video? He says that's one of the things you actually do when you go and start examining a player. One of the first things you do is say, okay, can I see video of how the injury happened? Because it gives you a better indication of what might be wrong with a player than just asking them, like, hey, what's bothering you? Oh, my knee's hurting, or my shoulder's hurting. Like, when you actually watch it on film, you have a pretty good idea of what you might be needing to diagnose. So he is going to be joining us weekly this year, and I think this is going to be pretty awesome. We haven't officially decided what day he will be joining us, but if you are out there and you're interested in gambling on football, or you are interested in gambling on or fantasy football or anything else, injury status and health of players is so massive that I think he's going to give us information that you can't find anywhere else. He's a great follow at Pro Football Doc. We had him on once before, and you guys loved it. We had him on to talk about, and he can talk about all injuries, obviously, regardless of football, but we're going to have him on specifically for football season. But we had him on to talk about Kevin Durant's injury. And the feedback, if you guys remember, was so phenomenal from all of you with the data that he gave us, with the information that we gave us. And I was like, man, we got to get this guy on more regularly. So David Chow, he is going to be on with us in hour three of the show today. Going to be the first hit that he does with us of what will be a regular weekly hit. Be breaking down the injury status of all the top athletes in the world of football, NFL in particular. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy him. If you haven't heard him yet, he'll be on in hour three. But up next, we're going to talk with Frank Isola. All of that should be good. And by the way, anybody watch last night? We had Tulsi Gabbard on the show, a couple of weeks ago? She was one of the most responsive guests we've ever had on the show in terms of favorable feedback. And, man, she went after Kamala Harris last night during the Democratic presidential debate. Wasn't a lot of great sports necessarily on television. That was an interesting sport day two of the Democratic presidential debate. So we will talk with Frank Isola next, see what he thinks about everything in the world of sports. I hope you guys are having a fantastic Thursday morning. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage. Congrats to Houston Astros fans. Congrats to the city of Houston. Be an intriguing sports city for sure with now Zach Greinke, and then you also throw in Russell Westbrook and the uncertainty that is surrounding the Houston Texans as they come into a season where they won a division and they went to the playoffs, but once they got to the playoffs, they kind of got exposed. What's going to happen with Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, and company? We will find out. A lot of things to follow in Houston, but the Astros now the favorite to win the World Series. And football is back. Rejoice. This is Outkick the Coverage. Up next, Frank Isola from Around the Horn, from The Athletic, and from SiriusXM. Thanks for hanging with us here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We bring in now Frank Isola at The Frank Isola. He writes for The Athletic. He talks on the radio for us and for SiriusXM, and you can watch him on television on Around the Horn. Frank, I appreciate you joining us. A lot of stories have happened since we talked last time, but I wanted to start with you here. I know your daughters play soccer, and I started off the show talking about this yesterday. What did you make of all the debate and the continuing fallout of the pay for women versus men in the world of soccer? I know it's kind of a expertise of yours in the world now, soccer. How did this story shake out? How was it covered? How should it have been covered?
I thought it was very interesting that the president of U.S. Soccer, you know, he released that statement clearly to get a little public support behind it, because if you remember, Clay, during the parade,
yeah,
he was on the float and they were kind of taunting him a little bit. Like, the players were actually on the float kind of confronting him in front of everybody, saying, what about equal pay? And he was like kind of keeping quiet, because I think he figured, you know what, I'm not getting into a debate right now during the parade on a float, because he's thinking to himself, no one's going to, even though I have the facts, it's not worth kind of pointing that out right now. But I did think that was pretty interesting that they have made a larger percentage of the money. I think that's I think that part of it is pretty interesting. It's a part that hadn't really been reported that much. What's also interesting about the women is, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation pays their salaries So even when they're playing for these club teams in the NWSL, they're getting paid by U.S. Soccer. And you know what's funny? When they got back from France, they had the parade, and then that following Sunday they had games, and the federation told all of them to not play. And sure enough, none of them played in the games, yet the fans were showing up
to the games
hoping to see the players. It makes no sense. I don't understand why they did that.
Yeah, that's tough, because if you're a women's soccer player, ultimately the World Cup's only every 4 years. And so that's really when all the interest comes in. So if you really want to make a substantial sum of money, you need the National Women's Soccer League to be successful. And you're right. I mean, that makes total sense that there would have been a lot of people out there who are saying, okay, let's go celebrate and support the NWSL. And then the players who they had seen in France were not there on the field to be celebrated. I can imagine parents showing up and thinking, man, this is a rough deal. We came to watch these stars and they aren't there. It's a good point. We were just talking among the crew about the fact that the NFL is back. And if you want to count the NFL as being back with the Hall of Fame game, we got the Broncos going up against the Falcons tonight. Will you watch?
Yeah, I'll definitely watch some of it. And I did see your tweet, I think, over the weekend when you said this will be the last weekend without football between now and February 8th. And you live in the South, so it's a little bit different. You know, up here in New York, where the NFL is huge, college football probably not so much, but it never ceases to amaze me, this country's appetite for football, especially the NFL and college. It becomes bigger and bigger. As much as people think the sport is kind of damaging itself and a lot of things that have happened off the field, everyone talks about player safety, people absolutely love the sport. It's incredible that it's starting as early as it is. But even, it's funny, Clay, even the storylines aren't really that interesting, whether it's, guys holding out. Guys have been holding out all the time in the NFL. They just don't feel like practicing the first couple of weeks in the extremely hot weather. It happens all the time. But even the stories of guys holding out have become even bigger. I remember years ago when Lawrence Taylor held out at the Giants. Everyone knew he was eventually going to be back. And sure enough, I think he showed up the first week of, right before the first game, 7 days before then. Sure enough, he was out there. But the storylines to me aren't that interesting, but people just want football so much that it just seems like it becomes bigger and bigger every year. The demise of football, as people love to report, is greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Now, you are in New York, and I'm fascinated by this storyline. Baker Mayfield, now he's got the mustache. Everything that he does becomes a major national story. And he's become a huge lightning rod. The Browns are an exciting, sexy team that you could never have said that about, maybe ever in the history of their franchise before. And then on the other side of the coin, you're in New York, which is the media capital of the world, really. And Sam Darnold hasn't made news for anything. And the two different paths that these quarterbacks are on, Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, that's kind of an ironic little setup, right? And does it surprise you how little news that Sam Darnold has made? And which of the two sort of paths do you think makes the most sense? The brash, everybody pay attention to me, we're going to win our division, we're going to try to contend for a championship, Baker Mayfield, or Sam Darnold, who really hasn't said anything throughout most of the time his career so far?
Yeah, and I think Sam Darnold, it might not be the worst thing to kind of follow the template that Eli Manning had. Eli Manning is incredibly boring, barely says anything, and he ended up having, he's still on this run, but he did, win two Super Bowls. He hasn't been very good the last few years, but it kind of worked for Eli Manning because I think those guys have figured out, you say one thing and it's become a big story. Baker Mayfield loves the spotlight, though. He loved it at Oklahoma, whether he was, grabbing his crotch in a game, planting the flag at Ohio State. He loves that part of it. What I think is interesting about the Browns, Sam Darnold's not saying anything, so it's almost not he has to prove something. But the Browns do so much talking, and last year I thought they became a really likable team, especially during Hard Knocks. But you have to admit, they are a little arrogant for a team that hasn't done anything, and then you throw kind of Odell Beckham into the mix. So it almost seems like Baker Mayfield feels like, well, I'm almost like competing with some of my teammates for all this attention. He's an interesting guy. There's no question about it. He likes to say kind of provocative stuff. But there is going to come a point, I think more so for the Browns this year, because everyone is kind of riding them and believing that they could be a serious team. But you look at their history, what they've done in that division, the fact that Pittsburgh, yeah, I understand what happened to them, but it's still the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are a pretty competent organization. I just think it's going to be interesting this year, where the Browns were the lovable team last year, but now you add Odell Beckham, who loves to run his mouth. Baker Mayfield loves to run his mouth. Because the great thing about sports, everyone could talk all they want. Eventually, you got to play the games.
What about Odell Beckham Jr.? You just mentioned him leaving the Giants. What's the vibe in the city of New York over Odell being gone? Are people still rooting for him? Are Giants fans still upset? Or have they moved on?
I mean, the guy is a brilliant talent. But like I always say, you know, he was remembered for making this incredible catch against the Dallas Cowboys on a Sunday night football game. But to me, it kind of summed up his career with the Giants. He made this remarkable catch. No one's taking that away from him, but they lost the game. And I think, you know, to me, when I think about his time here, he was injured a bunch and he lost. The last 2 years with the Giants, he played 16 of 32 games and they were 4-12 in those games. You know, he got paid, and now that he's on Cleveland, he can't stop talking about the Giants. And when he talks about the Giants, he makes it seem like, you know, the Giants are just some run-of-the-mill organization that basically has been around for 10 years. Like, he was helping the brand. I get it. They're not on national. Right now, they don't have a Sunday night football game. But the Giants have played 5 Super Bowls before Odell Beckham got here. They didn't play any when he was there. They played 1 playoff game, and he was disappointing. He even admits that he was disappointing. So I just think it's interesting that no one is questioning that he's a great player. But I would also say this. He's not even responsible for the greatest catch in Giants history. That belongs to David Tyree in the Super Bowl when he caught the football against his head.
Yeah, it's still an incredible catch. Would have kept the Patriots maybe from being 19-0
right.
And the greatest team in the history of the NFL. We're talking to Frank Isola. Follow him on Twitter at TheFrankIsola. You can watch him on Around the Horn. You can read him at The Athletic. You can listen to him at SiriusXM. Now, you mentioned the kind of the drama surrounding Odell. Well, one of the storylines certainly of the Giants is what's going to happen with Daniel Jones. What is the early read you've heard about Daniel Jones, former Duke quarterback, drafted very high by the Giants, potentially and probably to be the successor for Eli Manning? And how many more years do you think the Giants really believe Eli is their guy?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the front office, you know, taking Jones as high as they did. The thing that's amazing about Eli Manning, and no one is questioning that Eli Manning's toughness, how great he's been. I can't believe that he's still their guy. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago when Ben McAdoo wanted to replace him, or to, not replace him, but have someone else start in front of Eli Manning, I thought Eli was a little selfish. I get that he had this streak going, and I, you know, that's great and all that, but in a losing season, why not let other guys, you know, go out there and play and see what they have? I think the Giants are being a little misguided with Eli Manning. No one's questioning that he hasn't had a great run. I just think it was something that they should have thought about last year, changing him. So I think Jones might get a chance sooner than later if the Giants aren't winning. Because how many more losing seasons are you going to go through? I mean, it's time to start looking toward the future. And I think with Eli, especially in today's NFL, where, you know, the great thing about Eli is his ability to stand in the pocket, take a hit, not get hurt. But, you know, you need a little bit of mobility, and I think that's starting to hurt him at this point. He's not aging the way Tom Brady's aging. I don't think there's any question about that. No one, you know, Eli had 2 unbelievable playoff runs, but you look at his record, especially in the regular season, the last few years, it hasn't been good enough. So I think, you know how it works, Clay. Everyone loves the backup quarterback, especially when he's young, especially when he's a high pick. So I think, you know, the drums are going to start beating for the Giants to get Daniel Jones in there, especially if they get off to like a, you know, a 1-3 start, a 2-5 start. Then you're really going to start hearing it.
I mentioned that you write for The Athletic, and I know over the years you've written for a lot of newspapers, and you've seen sort of the evolution of the journalism industry from a writing perspective. The Athletic recently announced, I think last week, that they had 500,000 subscribers, or maybe it was Monday, I think it was maybe, 500,000 subscribers. What has your experience been like writing for The Athletic, and what do you think about the future of sports journalism in general, especially from a writing perspective?
Well, I think for them, and I mean, that's great news, and I think, you know, their goal is to try to get over 1 million, and what they're also thinking is, you know, they're trying to do what, say, the New York Times does, where you're looking for a more global audience. That's why I think you'll start to see more European soccer stuff covered, especially things like the Premier League, where you know you have fans in the U.S. that are big fans of those teams. So if you're, you know, if you're a fan of Tottenham and you also follow, you know, the Tennessee Titans, and you're also a fan of, I don't know, Oklahoma football, you could find all that in The Athletic. So I think from that standpoint, I think it's pretty smart not to have the advertising. I do laugh at this. I'll probably get in trouble for saying this. I think when I first started there, I kind of felt like too many people, especially a lot of people that came from newspaper, almost looked at it as like an early retirement job. Well, I don't have to be writing all the time. We had a meeting in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago. It was mostly the basketball guys, and the founders all asked us, like, basically, this, you know, people want more. And I kind of agree with that. Like, when I work for a newspaper, you kind of used to write. If you're covering a beat, you're writing every day. If you're writing a column, you're writing 3-4 times a week. I think I get it. Like, sometimes you need some time to work on a story, but not every story has to be some big feature where you're going to take 10 days to do it. I still think that strong commentary, I mean, you write commentary, I still think there's a big market for that. You know, whether or not, you know, you're writing about what, you know, LeBron James running on the court at an AAU game, I still think there can be feature stories, but I still think the public wants, you know, strong opinions, not necessarily hot takes, but strong opinions on stuff. That's what people want to read, and they want to read it, you know, somewhat quickly, and I think that's what The Athletic is starting to do.
We're talking to Frank Isola. You mentioned the LeBron controversy about running on the court, and it got a lot of attention. I'm curious for you, because I know you have daughters who played a lot of soccer, I believe, at a high level and have continued to do it. I think about that a lot as a parent. You and I are both like a scintilla as famous as LeBron James, but also still probably more recognizable given our jobs at a lot of times sporting events than your average parent might be. How did you handle being a parent when it came to going to your daughter's games with those things in mind? Because I think it's something that every parent has to realize and decide. And if you're out there listening to me right now, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The difference between you being the person who's playing the sport, which is, I think, what most people get used to as you grow up, to suddenly you're there to observe your children. And it totally is a different feeling and dynamic than anything like playing. And I'll be honest, it was like the first time I showed up for one of my little kids' games. I'm like, man, how do you handle this? You know, like, even though it's a low-level sporting event, like, you put a lot of energy and effort into it. What did you find?
You know, my son also played at a high level. In fact, yeah, he was at a national tournament, one year, soccer tournament in Arizona. Go to Arizona to play soccer in August.
It's quite
lovely. And Chris Carter was there, because Chris Carter, the football player's daughter, was playing for a team from Florida, and she was a goalkeeper, I believe. And I remember watching part of the game, and he was, you know, he was calm. He was yelling a couple of things to his daughter. He wasn't ranting and raving on the sideline. But, you know, if you go to, and as your kids get older, you'll see, you know, parents can get pretty intense. I mean, you have to watch yourself, and you know, everyone's going to get emotional. But I think, like what LeBron did, I'll give you the layup line. People are entertained by that. All right, if we could look past the layup line and the flexing on the sideline, I don't understand how anyone who's rational could say he shouldn't be running on the court.
Yeah,
I don't think that. Like, why can't there be boundaries for everyone? I just don't think it's appropriate. I think he kind of looked silly doing it. I think it was like a little too much. I would never run on the field while the game was going on, much less when the game ended. I mean, one year they made it to the national, so they won the Eastern Regional, and it was a big emotional moment. My son's team beat this very good team from Bethesda, Maryland, which turned out to have like about 5 pros on the team. We were excited. We're not running on the field. We're letting the kids have their moment. And I get it. It's LeBron. I get it that he's happy, and no one's questioning that, you know, that, yeah, it's great that he's watching his kids play. And you'll see this, Clay. There's nothing better than watching your kids play sports. It's an incredible experience, but there have to be some kind of boundaries, like running on the field or running on the court while the game's going. I can't believe that anyone said that that's okay. I don't understand that.
Yeah, that is fascinating to me. The question I think also is, LeBron's oldest son, I think, is going to be 15 in October. And so even though LeBron is the greatest basketball player in the world, and I would imagine if you're the son and you're named after him, it's a pretty cool dad to have. I would also think that almost every teenager thinks their dad and mom at some point are lame, right? And that's just natural generational type behavior.
Yeah.
And I would think that's even more the case if your dad's running on the court during the game. Like, at some point, when you're 15 or 16 years old, you're like, Dad, can you just like give me a little bit of space?
Yeah, and I also think, too, I think he's so used to performing, and he likes to perform, and he wants to be an actor. Even this thing that he does with, like, Taco Tuesday, when I watch it, I start cringing. And I can't believe, like, how corny it is, and it's, like, a little bizarre. But he just, like, we understand. He loves his kid. He loves being at his games. He's supporting him. It's great. That's what fathers should do. You don't get extra credit for doing what you should do. But you can't sit there and tell me that he also doesn't love the attention. He's not stupid. He knows that when he's at a game acting like that, it's going to go viral, and that, which is exactly what he wants. No one is knocking him for being at his kid's game and being happy and showing passion for it. But there's once again, there have to be some type of boundaries. And I don't think asking people not to run on the field and run on the court, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing to ask of anybody.
Yeah, like I was thinking about, I coach Little League Baseball, right? My 7 and 8 year old. And I was trying to put the LeBron and the running on the court, I think, is the thing that you would point to. And I was like, you know, a kid hit a home run, you know, let's say in our league. If his dad was so excited that he leapt onto the field and like ran onto the field to start running alongside with his kid, I think some people would kind of laugh about it, but it would also seem weird, right? I think if you think about it in the context of going to your own kid's Little League game, and whether it's basketball or whether it's, you know, football or whatever it is, somebody scores a touchdown, and then as he's running down the field, the dad, like, runs out as well. I mean, that would be really, I think, weird behavior. Not to say that you'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened, like, this is totally unacceptable, but you'd be like, this is strange behavior. And if you would think that for someone you didn't know, that seems like it's a fair standard to apply for LeBron James too.
And I also think, like, to your story, like, if a parent turned to you and said, yeah, but at least he loves his son and he's here at the game, you would say, all right, I'm not questioning that, but he still shouldn't be on the field running with his son after he hits a home run. That's the part I give LeBron credit, because I think he probably gets overly criticized sometimes, but I think there's also this, like, community of people that defend, like, everything that he does.
Yeah.
And, like, never say, well, he shouldn't do that. Like, you probably shouldn't show up for work walking out of your car drinking wine. Like, it's probably not the right thing to do. Like, it's okay to say that. Doesn't mean that you hate LeBron and everything that he's done has been terrible. But, like, you are, I think that's how the media has changed too, Clay. It's like either all or nothing now. Like, you're allowed to criticize the guy. It's, you know, some of the things that he does, you know, are a bad look. I think running on the court during your son's game is one of them. Showing up for the arena for work, even though you're not playing in the game, I understand that. Drinking wine, I don't think that's a great thing either. You know, you want to kill me for saying that? That's what I believe.
Outstanding stuff as always, Frank Isola. Watch him on Around the Horn. Read him at The Athletic. Listen to him on SiriusXM. We'll talk to him again soon.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Couple of big stories that we are tracking out there. The Major League Baseball trade deadline has officially come and gone, and the Houston Astros made the biggest move of all. This expectation was that the Yankees may need to add some pitching help. Well, the Astros did it instead. This is now the Astros' starting rotation as we roll through. You got Justin Verlander, who obviously is a first ballot Hall of Famer, has been extraordinary. You've got Zach Greinke, who is 35 years old this year with an ERA of 2.9. Pretty solid. You got Gerrit Cole, who is sitting at 12-5 with an ERA under 3 as well. That's three different pitchers with an ERA under 3. Then you got Wade Miley, who has an ERA of just over 3. And then the expectation is probably that it's going to be Brad Peacock when he comes back from the injured list. I believe he'll be back. But that's a pretty incredible starting five right now for the Houston Astros that catapults them to the favorites, according to the odds makers, to win another World Series. Big move again for a 35-year-old Arizona Diamondbacks former pitcher who now has become a Houston Astro, and that is going to likely make them tough to beat when it comes to the postseason, assuming everybody stays healthy. So that's where we are with the Major League Baseball trade deadline. If you listen to this show, props to John Morosi, who said that Greinke might well be on the trading block and that he would be a guy. I believe we have a cut of him saying that on the show yesterday. I asked him, hey, is there a guy out there that you think might be moved that would shock a lot of baseball fans? And he said this. else is out there that could make people by 4 o'clock Eastern look down at their phones or look at television as the news breaks and their jaw kind of drop?
Zach Greinke could move, Clay. That's one that's probably a surprise to a lot of fans. He has been mentioned a little bit, though. Big contract, hard to move him, but I would say teams that have a thin farm system but an interest in taking on that salary, like the Angels, the Astros, and the Phillies, watch them very carefully.
Wow. Even said the Astros.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good for John Morosi to have nailed that, you know, about 10 hours before the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Because when this story broke, you know, everybody's phone immediately blew up from a perspective of baseball fans. And yesterday we had John Morosi on, I think, in hour three of the show. And that was a hell of a prediction. Braves made, by the way, moves as well that could help them. But the Dodgers, the Yankees, a lot of teams that were anticipated to be making moves stayed pat. So that is the latest on the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Roughly, 47, 48 games on average remaining, 50 games for some teams remaining in the season. And now everybody has to roll with what they've already got as well. The Hall of Fame game is tonight. NFL returns. The Denver Broncos, have they officially said whether Joe Flacco is going to play tonight? Will this be his debut for the Broncos? Anybody know on the show? I haven't heard whether he will take the field at all, because sometimes in this Hall of Fame game, because it leads to teams playing 5 preseason games, they don't even trot out the starters at all. Drew Locke obviously is on the Denver Broncos, and that is a storyline that I think is very intriguing to follow, whether Drew Locke will be looking like the quarterback of the future for the Denver Broncos down the stretch. He'll probably get some snaps, probably get an early read on him. Second round pick, heir apparent to Joe Flacco, but Flacco believes he still has a lot of time left in his career. And then obviously on the other side, Matt Ryan, who the Falcons had a pretty disappointing performance. We'll see this past season whether with better health in the secondary in particular, but on defense specifically, they can put themselves into a position to be contenders again in the NFC South, as well as contenders to advance in the playoffs after a couple of years prior to last season where they were very good. Remember, they almost beat the Philadelphia Eagles before the Eagles went and won their championship. If Matt Ryan gets the ball just a little bit lower to Julio Jones in the back right corner of the end zone in Lincoln Field there in Philadelphia, then we may have never seen the rise of Nick Foles at all, because the Eagles would have lost that first game potentially in the playoffs, that divisional round game that the Atlanta Falcons could have won and were not able to do just a couple of years ago. So anybody know on Flacco?
Yeah.
And has there been official word about his performance or non-performance?
2 days ago, it was reported that both Ryan and Flacco will sit out.
Okay. So both of the starters out. I mean, that's not uncommon when you look at the preseason when teams are playing 5 games. And I think, honestly, that's one of the reasons why the NFLPA and the NFL have to get this thing resolved. Because I think what you're going to start to see more and more is teams just sitting their starters. And particularly the quarterback position, when there's real risk at play of an injury every time you get hit, why put your quarterback out there for some glorified scrimmage action when you're doing all the training camp work already? And again, what I always say is, it's fascinating to me that college football, which has kids coming from high school, right? You can literally be coming from the last game you played being in high school football in front of a small, relatively speaking, crowd. And the next game you play, you start in college football in a game that really matters. For instance, Miami and Florida are playing on August 24th. That is a massive old school rivalry game in the Sunshine State. There will be a lot of players on both sides who will be playing their first ever college football game after having played their last game in high school. If college football coaches with limited practice hours are able to bring high school kids up to college and put them into games the very first time they make a tackle in front of anybody in a stadium, is a game against a high-profile, high-caliber opponent, like we're talking about with Florida and Miami, if that is possible without a single preseason game for a kid going from high school to college, how is it that NFL teams, which are often stocked with veterans and have no limitation on the amount of hours that they can practice or spend at the facility, couldn't be ready to go with week one of the season without a ton of preseason football? Nobody's ever been able to make that argument to me in a very coherent fashion. Again, we can take high school kids and have them ready to play huge games in front of millions of people on television, sold out stadiums in college football, but we can't get guys who are professionals that have spent way more time with their playbooks and with their actual practices and the mini camps and everything else. We can't get those guys ready to go for week one. So that's always been my issue, and I'm a season ticket holder for NFL games. So I definitely look at the amount of money that I spend. I got to buy two different preseason games and pay full freight in the same way that I do for the eight regular season games. It's never made sense to me. Never made sense to me at all. I think if the NFL went to 18 games, they could just totally eliminate the preseason completely and go straight in with week one being the deciding factor. And look, people out there say, well, what about the younger guys who are trying to make a spot on the roster? Don't they deserve to play? Most NFL teams don't have that much uncertainty of their roster with all of the mini camps and all of the training camp practices that they get. They don't get that much more information based on these preseason games. So the preseason will officially begin tonight. That will be pretty exciting to follow. Okay, usually we do the anonymous mailbag. Let's go ahead and open up the phone lines. Let Dub field these on the return of the NFL, Major League Baseball trade deadline. I will solve any problems that exist in the Outkick universe right now. 877-996-6369. All you have to do when you call Dub is give him your state, and then I will solve all of the problems that surround you, that surround the Outkick universe. 877-996-6369 is that phone number. Get hooked up now. Load up the phone lines. We'll be ready to go. I'll answer some of those questions. Also, I want to hit LeBron here while Dub is fielding all those calls and getting ready for the anonymous mailbag. We talked about Taco Tuesday yesterday. I think LeBron got a complete pass on that. I bet I'm the only person who pointed out the hypocrisy of LeBron being able to do a Mexican accent and how if an Asian, Hispanic, or white person did a black accent while celebrating a stereotypically black food, whatever you want to call that, like tacos are from Mexico, nobody other than me even raised that. LeBron gets a pass because he's a social justice warrior. And when you're a social justice warrior, you're able to be a hypocrite as long as you're on the quote-unquote right side. But I'm curious what you guys think. Roberto, I know you have a daughter. She's so young. She's not playing sports yet.
No, not yet.
This turned into a big flashpoint because Jason Whitlock talked about it on his show. And frankly, because there's not a ton of actual sports news, LeBron at his AAU game running on the court while the game was still going on. That's probably the only thing that I would point to. And look, there's so many people out there that want to praise LeBron when he does things that are just basically good dad things. Like, oh, he's going to watch his kid play sports.
Yeah, big wow, yeah.
Yeah, like, okay. Like, you're kind of an ass if you're a dad and you don't go watch your kid play sports. We're living this era where we praise people oftentimes if they're celebrities for doing things that are just basically human, decent things to do, right? Oh, LeBron goes to watch his kids play their Little League games, their AAU games or whatever. Okay. So you give him credit for that? Like, how many dads, if you're a dad out there and you're listening to me right now and you're not going to watch, I don't mean every single event, right? Because people have jobs, you have responsibilities. But if you're not going to the majority of your kids' sporting events, then you're being a jerk, in my opinion. You're not being very supportive of your children. So I'm not big on giving people credit for things that you should be doing. Who like, oh, I pay my mortgage every month, okay? That's why you took the loan out on your house to pay your mortgage every month. I've got a job and I work hard, okay? That's literally what you should be doing. I provide for my family, okay? That's the job of a dad and a mom oftentimes. We spend a lot of time, especially with celebrities, giving them credit for things that aren't actually that impressive and, in fact, should be the standard. So my kid comes home and he says, hey, I got all A's and B's on my report card. Good. That's what you should be doing. I don't ever want to see a C. That's my standard for how my kid should do on his report card. Doesn't mean I don't say, hey, nice job, but I'm not going to throw a parade because my kid doesn't get a C. I want him to be above average in his academic performance. I want to be above average in my performance as a dad. And the bare minimum average to me is, yeah, I showed up and I watched my kid. But the thing that is funny, and Frank Isola brought this up in hour one, it definitely is worth discussing. It's okay to criticize LeBron for running on the court or even to criticize him for doing the layup line. That's kind of weird, right? You're going to do the layup line for your 14-year-old's team? Who are like, well, those kids love LeBron James interacting with them. Well, he can interact with them without it being during a game. Like, he can go play basketball with that entire team without there being an audience of people there watching him. And I don't know what LeBron's son thinks, but he's turning 15 in October. Most teenagers, it doesn't matter how badass your dad is, they get embarrassed by dad. Barack Obama talked about that. The president of the freaking United States. You would think that Sasha and Malia would have been like, this is everything my dad does is amazing. He's the president of the United States. You know what they thought? My dad's embarrassing. You know why they thought that? Because Obama's probably a pretty good dad. Because he is just a dad to them. Doesn't matter how successful he is. Doesn't matter that he's a leader of the free world. He's just dad. He's dorky. He probably makes dad jokes. They think he's awkward at times. They don't really want him to meet their boyfriends. I bet 15-year-old LeBron James Jr., Bronny they call him, I bet he thinks his dad's kind of dorky. I bet he watches those Taco Tuesday videos and he thinks his dad is corny. That's normal to be a teenager. So dad being in the layup line doing super dunks, a little bit weird. Okay, still a little bit weird. Saw Doug Gottlieb talk about that. Yeah, a little bit weird. But running on the court while the game is still going on, that's just super weird. I mean, I coach Little League Baseball. If we have a kid hit a home run, and it happens every now and then, kid hits a home run in the league, gets to jog the bases. If one of the parents ran on the field to congratulate their kid while he was jogging around the bases, that would be weird. Not criminal behavior. Not like insanely unacceptable, but a little bit weird. And I say that as somebody who coaches Little League Baseball. Right? I don't think there's anybody out there who would see that and think, that would be weird. If your son makes a great play in a basketball game and you run out on the court while the basketball game is still going on at any arena or court in America, that's weird too. Again, not criminal behavior, not totally unacceptable, but weird. I think your eyebrows would go up if somebody made a great play in a basketball game that you were watching, and then a parent ran on the court while the game was still going on to celebrate that play. I think you would think, man, you're a grown-ass man. What are you doing running on the court? I think if this happened in hockey, certainly it'd be ridiculous. If it happened in football, it'd be ridiculous. I mean, the Hank Aaron home run is marred, most people think, because random strangers ran on the field to jog alongside of Hank Aaron. So I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, when an athletic event is going on and you are not playing, you should stay on the sidelines. In fact, that's the rule for pretty much every sport everywhere. And LeBron James can be exuberant. He can be excited. But do you guys not agree with me that it would be strange? Danny G, you coached, you don't have any kids yet, but you coached a little league. Wouldn't you think it was weird if one of the parents, one of your kids when you were coaching, had run on the field while the game was going on to celebrate a play?
Yeah, I would think it was weird, but if it was Cody Bellinger and his son, I
still think it would be super weird. I don't care.
But I think it's being overanalyzed just a little bit, because when I saw the highlight of this, I just kind of thought it was cool. That's all I thought. And now I've been hearing everybody just dig into it. And look, I get it. It's the old Chris Rock thing where when you do what you're supposed to be doing, what he say, his famous line, what do you want, a cookie?
Yeah.
You're supposed to pay your bills. Okay, I get it. But there are so many athletes out there who we know are deadbeat parents.
But I don't even think that that's necessarily true from a perspective to defend athletes.
Really? You haven't heard the stories about athletes who have six kids by five different women?
There are certainly athletes that are not very good parents. But I don't think I think that athletes, by and large, statistically, would be more likely to be good parents than the nation as a whole would be. I know we focus on the ones that aren't because it's a storyline and we tend to focus on negativity more than we do positivity. But for instance, defending athletes, people say, like NFL players, have domestic violence incidents at way too frequent of rates, right? I mean, that's a common discussion point, common complaint. But NFL athletes have way less domestic violence rates than soldiers and police officers do, right? Partly that's a function of wealth, because the more money you have, the more flexibility you typically have with your schedule, the more ability you have to go to games. So I think the majority of athletes who have children in this country, the vast, vast majority are showing up at their games. And I just think if you run on I coach Little League Baseball in a community where there are tons of famous people who are in the entertainment industry, whose kids are in our league, right? Like, I live in an area of Nashville where there are tons of people who are singers, songwriters, actors, actresses. We have a huge population, much like people who might live in LA or New York or whatever. And a lot of those parents will come to the games, right? Like, for instance, my kid regularly plays against Luke Bryan's kid. And if we were playing Little League and Luke Bryan's kid hit a home run, Luke Bryan is insanely famous, right? If Luke Bryan then ran on the field to run around the bases with his son, I would think it was super weird. Not that it's a bad thing, not that he had done anything wrong, not that it's some sort of criminal behavior, but I think almost every parent who was there would be like, this is super weird, and Luke Bryan is a huge celebrity, right? I am a low-level celebrity, very low-level celebrity. But in the gym, when my kid's playing low-level basketball, there's a huge percentage of people that would know who I am. When my kid makes an awesome move in basketball and does something great, if I ran on the court to celebrate it with him while the game was still going on, everybody in that gym, I think, justifiably would be like, what the hell are you doing, dude? The game is still going on. So I don't believe that the person,
Run on the court?
Yes.
I mean, he jumped up and he flexed.
He ran on the court.
But he didn't run and like hug his kid. I mean,
I'll give you the layup line.
I kind of was like, that's a little strange.
The layup line is weird.
Admit that was a little strange to me, but still, I didn't even overanalyze that. But when he got up and flexed because his kid dunked, really, the only reaction I had was, dang, his kid's going to be a beast. That's the only thing I thought.
Again, if you react at a sporting event off of the field, it's funny to me because the same people who are defending LeBron, the minute that anybody touches the court or the field in any kind of college or pro sport, you're like, that person needs to be tackled and arrested, right? It's not your place to be on the field or the court. It just isn't. And so I don't think the standard should be different for LeBron because he happens to be great playing basketball, just like I don't think the standard should be different. I'm just using Luke Bryan as an example. We talked about this in my wins and losses podcast with Kirk Herbstreit. Like, Kirk Herbstreit is he's the face of college football. His kids play high school football, and they were pretty good, and they were contending for state championships all year. imagine the reaction if Kirk Herbstreit, because his kids make a great play, suddenly runs on the football field while the game is going on to celebrate with his kids. I think everybody would be like, dude, what in the world are you doing? They wouldn't be like, oh, he's Kirk Herbstreit. He's the face of college football. He should be able to run on any football field and celebrate anytime he wants to. No. Maybe we need to open up phone lines about this. 877-996-6369. What do you think, Roberto? You got a kid. I mean, she's young. She hasn't started playing sports yet. But didn't this seem a little bit weird to you or no?
Yeah, when he got in the layup line, that's too much. The part where he was, like, flexing out. It's his son.
The only thing that I would say is the one that shouldn't happen, period, is he shouldn't go on the court.
Exactly.
While the game is going on. The layup line is a little bit weird. There's not anything wrong with it necessarily. I just think if I'm a 15-year-old, like his son is about to be, he'd probably rather just be out there with his teammates than have his dad doing dunks.
And then you don't want to take the tension away from your kid also.
Yeah, LeBron does.
Yeah, exactly.
What about you, Eddie Garcia? What did you think about this?
Yeah, I thought it was all a little weird. I mean, for a guy, and I, it's hard to, you know, criticize someone who's enthusiastic about something his son does. But at the same time, for a guy who's played in NBA finals and has been at the heights of sports, to react like that to even a great dunk by your kid, it's just a little over the top.
I don't even have any problem with the reaction if he's on the sideline in the crowd.
Right, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about him running on the floor and his shoe flopping off and all that stuff.
It's like, you're 35 years old or whatever. He's about to be 35 years old. Like, you know, you're not 18. I think it's crazy. Like running on, I just put it in the context of coaching or thinking about Little League, like in the way that I'm involved now. No matter who the parent is, no matter how famous they are, if somebody runs on the court or the field to celebrate something that their team did during the game, I think you'd be like, this is crazy. This is ludicrous.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We're joined now by David Chow. He's at Pro Football Doc. He's going to be joining us weekly during football season. I'm excited about that. You guys were very fired up when we had him on last time. So, Dr. Chow, appreciate you getting up early with us, starting the morning off. How excited are you for the return of football starting tonight?
Way more excited than my wife is.
So for people who don't, that's a great answer. A lot of men out there definitely can empathize with that. I'm curious, for people who are out there who do not know you, explain what you do and why they should follow you on Twitter as you watch all these NFL games taking place.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm thrilled to be on with you this season. And look, if Clay Travis wants me on, you should follow me. I think that's the very simple reason. But beyond that, I mean, I call what I do the medical Mike Pereira.
Yeah.
Essentially, I give injury information. I'm a former NFL team physician, so I give insider knowledge, not insider information, but about what an injury is. And, you know, obviously teams are purposefully a little bit secretive, and so I can interpret some of that. But even in-game, I studied video for 17 years when I was a head NFL team physician with the San Diego Chargers. And every Monday morning, everyone else would be looking at film. So after seeing a player on Sunday on the film, on the field, on the sideline, in the locker room, after an MRI on Monday and, an exam, I'd go up and look at film with the head athletic trainer, and the video guys would show us all the replays. And we just studied film just to know more. And now that's quite useful to reverse engineer injuries. And now it's quite useful to see what an injury is, you know, before there are even some announcements.
Yeah, so the Mike Pereira analogy is a great one because Mike Pereira explains the rules better than I think anyone does. You can see an injury happen, watch the video of it, and oftentimes be able to tell what's likely to have occurred based on your experience. And it's actually, you're not saying you're 100% accurate being able to diagnose, but I've followed you for a while now. You're a really, really high level of accuracy because typically, I mean, like you said, even when you're treating a player, you'd go back and watch because you can sometimes diagnose what happened to them based on the angle they get hit, where they get hit, everything else. You can sometimes figure out what's gone wrong.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I'd be careful. I'm careful not to use the word diagnose because medically diagnose implies that I'm examining, look at MRIs and whatever. I call it injury impressions. And why can't it be accurate? First of all, when I was an NFL team physician, I'd run onto the field and I'd tell my assistants, don't look at me, look at the Jumbotron, look at the replay. And then late in my career, there was replay on the sideline and we'd go look at that less for concussions than for injuries sometimes. And why does it make sense? I mean, look, I make no secret about it. I'm sitting at home watching the game. I'm not trying to fool anyone thinking that I've looked at an MRI or something like, or an X-ray or something like that. But if you go to the doctor because you hurt yourself playing, you know, adult indoor soccer or something, what does the doctor say to you? What happened to your knee? Well, I was running, I planted, I felt a pop, or I got hit on the outside. Well, that's the video.
Yeah.
So that's the history of the injury. That's why it can be helpful. So it's not a carny trick. It's not magic. It's using medical information. And then looking at, and quite honestly, the other thing that I say I do, Clay, is you read between the lines in terms of what the coach is saying, what the team is saying, et cetera. For example, Matt Nagy this year said, Mr. Biscay would play on Thanksgiving, et cetera, in the national media. And I wrote an article saying that he wouldn't because he looked at the video and it was his throwing shoulder and the way that it was externally rotated, it was a capsular stretch. And there's no way that you're going to play with that. And he missed a couple of weeks. It's never 100% accurate, but if you're getting audited by the IRS, do you want a good accountant or hopefully a good accountant that used to be an IRS agent? And I'm kind of the former IRS agent.
That's a good analogy as well. We're talking to David Chow. Follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. So let's dive into some of these injury situations. Andrew Luck, the Colts are being very careful with him. You've heard some of the comments. How nervous should fantasy football draftees be? Maybe also gamblers who are thinking about the Colts as futures tickets and Colts fans in general about the way and the reports that you've seen so far about Andrew Luck?
Well, dialing back a year, you know, when there was a lot of concern about his shoulder, at this point last year, there was a ton of concern still on Andrew Luck's shoulder. And I said at the time I was less concerned about Andrew Luck's season-long injury health than Deshaun Watson's.
Yeah.
And I was less concerned about Deshaun Watson than Carson Wentz. And unfortunately, it played out that way with Carson, you know, having a rough year, Deshaun Watson having a nice second half, a slower first half. And obviously, Andrew Luck, maybe a slow game or two, but he really did well last year. This year, I actually have a lot of confidence that Andrew Luck will be fine. Look, I hear out there, look, Adam Schefter is the best. He reported that teams were worried, including Andrew Luck and Frank Reich, about the Kevin Durant situation where the, quote, calf somehow turned into an Achilles. This is not the same deal at all. I get why they would be worried. I get why the Colts would be cautious. I get why Andrew Luck would be cautious. Some of that caution has to do with being prisoners of the moment, looking at the Kevin Durant video. Some of that caution is warranted based on how perhaps the Colts and or Andrew Luck handled his shoulder issue, pushing through some things. So caution, caution, caution. I don't think it's any more than just caution. I think he's going to be fine, and I don't have really any worries about Andrew Luck. And I can understand why he wants to be cautious. He's talked about his shoulder, how he felt like he did it the wrong way, rushing through some things, and he just wants to be super, super careful, which is probably not a bad thing.
What about Cam Newton coming off the surgeries that he's had in the offseason? Obviously, he was not healthy at all last year. What would you expect for his availability to be early in the season, maybe during the preseason as well? How optimistic are you about his full recovery?
Well, you know, Kelly, I always love questions when they come to players and I can give, you know, thumbs up answers. I like to be optimistic rather than pessimistic and always delivering bad news. And I think there's more good news for Cam Newton. Look, is he at 100% this minute? Is he going to play all four preseason games? Look, a lot of that is a coaching decision. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I think he's going to have a much better year this year than he did last year. I don't think the shoulder's going to act up in the same way. He posted video himself. I think it was a YouTube channel or something where he showed the doctor talking to him after surgery. And the key there is he's regained some of his motion, and you need all your motion to be able to throw with good mechanics and throw deep. And that's the best part of the good news. However, he did say, and the doctor did say something to the effect of the cartilage damage was not as great as we thought, which is good news, but there certainly is damage, which could have long-term implications. Maybe not for this season, but, you know, is he going to become a Tom Brady into his 40s? Not sure that's going to happen. But for right now, I think Cam Newton is okay.
We're talking to Dr. David Chow. He was the physician for the San Diego Chargers for 17 years. Now he is on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He's going to be with us all year. What about Derrick Henry? Derrick Henry in a walking boot right now, finished, I think, sixth overall in total yardage. A lot of people out there, fantasy football drafts coming up. He's not practicing right now. Big deal, small deal. How would you analyze it?
I saw one 2-second snippet from a cell phone camera as Derrick Henry got hurt. So, you know, caveats there. There is some concern there. I wouldn't say alarm, but there is some concern there for a couple of reasons. First of all, you know this, Clay. Look, I have the utmost respect for Mike Vrabel, and if I were head coach, I wouldn't give injury information either. So, and in the preseason, in the training camp time, there's no requirement for injury reports at all, so you don't have to say anything. So, in some ways, small injuries can be made in mountains, molehills. You don't know if it's a molehill or a mountain, depending on what happens, because you don't have any information. But based on that very limited video, a walking boot, it does appear to be a calf strain. And the calf strain on Derrick Henry is a little bit bigger deal than on Andrew Luck, and here's why. First of all, Andrew Luck's calf injury started in June. This is something that's starting in late July. And Andrew Luck is a quarterback who probably doesn't want to make his living exploding and pushing off, whereas Derrick Henry, that's what he does. And indeed, calf injuries can linger and you can have setbacks. So I'm not saying Derrick Henry has a bad calf strain and his season is done, but I am saying this is something to watch in terms of when he can get back, in terms of the severity of the calf strain. It is possible for this calf strain to leak into the regular season. I'm not saying it's going to. I have no idea of the severity, but it is possible. Whereas Andrew Luck, I think, is a little bit different situation because of the timing and the position that he plays, et cetera.
Last question for you. Still a lot of interest in Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson as they come back from injuries. What should we anticipate for both men?
Well, I think, you know, they're going to work hard to try and get back, but I think it's going to be hard for either player to return next year at 100% for a couple of reasons. Kevin Durant, I do have some optimism. It's not the doom and gloom from an Achilles that we've seen. Once again, I think we're prisoners of the moment there. We look more at Kobe Bryant, that he never really came back the same way. But you have to understand, Kobe Bryant was several years older when he came back after, I think, the sixth or seventh game, had a knee injury, so he essentially missed 2 years. When you miss 2 years in your mid-30s, that's a tough comeback, and that's what happened with Kobe. I'd rather compare Kevin to Dominique Wilkins, the human highlight reel, who tore his Achilles about the same time and came back to have as strong or stronger career. I'm not saying when Kevin Durant comes back, first of all, if he comes back at all this next year, it will be well under 100%. But the following season, he could return to the same form. Look, it's hard to come back and be the best player in the league like he was, but he certainly could be a top, top, top player when he comes back. As far as Klay Thompson is concerned, you know, Klay plays through everything, right? And he's tough. So I'd be surprised if he doesn't try to come back at some time next season. I mean, he always is lobbying to play. But to ask him to be 100% in the game of basketball, where you have to play, you know, offense and defense and cover and react, which is much harder for an ACL, I think that's asking a lot for him to be 100%. Now, if you want to make him a spot shooter towards the end of next season in the playoffs and sit in the corner and get fed the ball from Steph, that's not a bad formula. So we'll see what happens.
Outstanding stuff as always. We'll continue to talk to you all season. I cannot wait. He's David Chow at Pro Football Doc. I just retweeted him. You can go follow him there. I guarantee you will love the information that he provides.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.